Right, what is your full name?
James Barclay Watts. I was born in Darwin on the 15th of January 1913.
And who was your grandfather?
Fairfax Ingram Henry Finnis. He came from Mauritius in about 1911 to South Australia, where his uncle was the surveying with Colonel Light. And he went to Darwin in 1883.
And what did he do in Darwin?
Well, when he went up there, he just went up as looking for, you know, for work more than anything. And he was working on the railway. He did work on the railways when it started, on the surveying. He wasn't a surveyor, but he did work with the survey gangs. And after that, he started in his own businesses with the customs and the agencies and different things like that. He was closely associated with E.V.V. Brown, old man Brown, and they were very great friends.
So, did he marry in Darwin?
Yes, he married Rosetta Dwyer from Launceston. She was in Darwin as a, or like a nanny, or I suppose you'd call it, and she was looking after, I think it was Mr. Stretton's children, and they met and married in Darwin. Oh, just the year of marriage, I couldn't tell you offhand. And they had five children.
Right. And exactly what did your grandfather do as far as work goes then?
Well, he was an agent mainly, dealing with the Chinese and in the customs. He was in customs with a chap named CSC, and he was the sub-collector of customs there. And he was associated with many things there that, I mean, I didn't know them all.
As a child, what are your memories of him?
Oh, I thought he was an old man because he had a big beard. And he lived next door to us. We always lived next door to one another.
And where was that?
In Bennett Street, and just up next door to Bell's Corner. And, I mean, other than that, he used to wander away into the bush shooting and, you know, bring back a kangaroo for tea or something like that. But he was a great hunter. He used to do a lot of shooting out in the different stations. He was great friends of the Kulpinya people, the Herbert brothers, Mr. and Mrs. Herbert, the old Mr. and Mrs. Herbert, and the two boys and the girl and the daughter. Great friends of theirs.
Right, and one of his children was your mother.
That's right.
And what was her name, full name?
Alice Mona Watts. Oh, Finnis, then.
And she was born?
Darwin.
When?
On the 6th of December, 1892.
And she died?
On the 12th of August, 1940.
Right, and she married your father, and his name, full name?
Douglas Crombie Watts. He was born in Brisbane at Red Hill, J Street and Ogre Terrace, Red Hill, in 1885. I don't know the date of his actual birthday.
And he died then?
February 1930, in Toowoomba.
Right. Now, firstly, your mother then, she was born in Darwin.
Yes.
And how many children were in that Finnis family?
Five children, two girls and three boys.
Right. Your father then, he came up to Darwin. When would that have been?
About 1910, I would say, and he was in the commercial bank, the accountant and teller in the commercial bank.
And he met your mother?
In Darwin.
In Darwin, yes. Was he always in the bank?
Oh, no. He was in the bank in Darwin. He married there, and my brother was born in 1911, December 1911, and they transferred him to Broken Hill. And when they got down there, they didn't like it very much, so they decided to go back to Darwin. He left the bank and became an agent in Darwin, his own business.
And what was he an agent for?
Oh, helping the Chinese import stuff from overseas, and he was in charge of the war of stevedoring and worked with Jolly and Company and, you know, different agencies. He had to carry on all sorts of different agencies. He was associated with the unions when they were formed and that sort of thing.
Yeah. Now, he was mayor of Darwin.
Yeah.
And what can you remember of his period as mayor? You were a child then.
Oh, yes.
Weren't you?
Yes, I was only about four when he first became mayor, but he, over a period from 1917 until about 1930, he was mayor about half a dozen times at least. Of course, they had elections nearly every year up there for the council, and they appointed the mayor then, and different ones came into it, and different, you know, different mayors at different times, and they didn't last, or last the 12 months, and he'd come back again. And
so he wasn't paid very much for being mayor.
No, I think he only got about, if I remember rightly, I think it was about £20 a year allowance to do all their entertaining and everything.
And can you remember any functions that were there in relation to that?
Yes, in 1919, when they started flying from England, he met nearly every plane and entertained every man. And civic receptions and everything here, and that he and my mother were connected with everything of that.
And where were the civic receptions held?
Most in the town hall, old town hall.
Yeah. And can you remember anything about them?
Oh, well, I can remember, you know, quite a few of them, but, the civic receptions, I think, are all the same. They just go in and have something to eat and a few speeches, and that's all there was to it.
Now, he was involved in the Gilruth affair.
Yes, very much.
Yes. What are your recollections
of that? Well, I don't recollect too much about it, but because I was pretty young then, and I do remember him being connected with it. He and Harold Nelson. Harold Nelson was the main man. He was the agitator, actually. But my father was the go-between, really. He was a union man, but he was trying to stop any outbreak of violence. And he actually led the deputation, went into Gilruth to try and get things calmed down and get Gilruth to come out and speak to the men. He did in the end, after a long period of time, arguing with him, get him to come out. But he was also sheriff at the same time, I believe, and that was what kept, you know, he had to try and keep the peace between everybody.
Can you remember some of the people that he had to associate with as in his job as mayor?
Well, he was associated with everybody in Darwin, because at that time there were only about 1,000 people in Darwin.
Well, let's talk about the Goose Club.
Well, the Goose Club, that was formed by Judge Malham. Well, then he was a barrister and solicitor in Darwin, R.I.D. Malham. And he didn't become judge until a few years later. And there's old Freddie Thompson, he ran the Northern Territory Times paper. And Norm Barrett, he was another barrister and solicitor, and my father, the four of them. They used to gather down on the esplanade near the government offices, on a seat there, an old garden seat, and every Monday night I think it was, they used to go down there, and they discussed the different aspects of things were going on, and try to work things out, how they could better things for people in Darwin at that time. That's all it was. And then I don't know why they got the name of Goose Club.
Now, your mother, what activities did she have in Darwin that you can remember as a child?
Well, she used to entertain quite a bit, because people, when my father was working or anything, people, instead of having civic receptions, they'd come round to our place, our home. I remember when Kingsford Smith landed in Darwin once, that we went out and met him, and instead of a civic reception, he came in the car with us and came to our place and had a meal in at our home.
Right. Now, what was this home like? What was the house?
Well, houses in Darwin at that time were different altogether than what houses are now. All you had were two big bedrooms in the centre of the house. And you had about a 9 or 10 foot veranda right around the whole of the house. And the veranda was generally made out of bamboo. About three strands of bamboo woven through wire down all the way around the house. And that's to allow the circulation of air through the place. And you didn't sleep in a bedroom, you slept on the verandas. Sometimes the ladies slept in the bedrooms, but it's too hot. They were made of galvanised iron roofs, no ceilings.
And the floor?
floor was a wooden floor, just raised about 12 inches off the ground, that's all. But there were a lot of them government houses that were real houses, but built in the same style, but they were timber and raised off the ground up to about 9 feet, 8-9 feet. You get under, you get under, walk underneath them, and that was to allow the circulation of air.
Well, how did you go for mosquitoes then?
We used mosquito nets.
Did you?
Yes.
And disease? Did you suffer from any? Anyone suffer from ailments?
Oh, plenty of small chicken pox and measles and mumps and things like that. And we got colds twice a year. We only had the two seasons, and every when they change, we got a cold every year. And we used to get fever with them. We call it dengue fever, and but aches and pains, but only last about a week, and we were right again.
There was one time when there was an outbreak of whooping cough and measles whatnot. Did that go through your family?
I'll say yes, I had a lot.
Now, you went to the school, the primary school?
Yes, and high school in Darwin. The headmaster there was V.L. Lampy, Vic Lampy. Joe King was the assistant. And, oh, there were quite a number of other teachers there. Ernie Tambling, I think his son's still in Darwin.
Grant Tambling, is it?
Yeah.
Now, you were friendly with the Lampy boys, were you?
Yeah, I was very friendly with the Lampys, yes.
Can you tell us about them?
Well, the three of them, there was Doug as the youngest, Norman and Les. Doug became government secretary, I think it was, in Darwin in the end, just before he died. And Norm was a wing commander in the RAF during the war. And Les, he was in the ES&A bank, but he was also a commissioned officer in the war.
And you used to play with them. What did you do for play?
Oh, we had push bikes and used to ride around the countryside and go fishing or different things like that.
And sport?
Oh, yes, played cricket together, tennis. Les and I used to play in doubles at tennis. And at Norm and Doug didn't take much to sport. Les did. Les played a lot of football and that.
And you were also friendly with Mr. Nelson, were you?
Well, my father was very friendly with him.
His son?
I knew the family very well, yes. And they're a little bit older than me. And, when I say a little bit older, they were a couple of years, I suppose, mainly. But I was reading a book where they said he had five children, but I didn't know the fifth child. I knew four of them. I think they're getting mixed up with Titch, the little Aboriginal boy that they adopted. I think he was the fifth one. Yeah, because Jock Nelson, his second son, youngest son, and I think he's the youngest member of the family, he became a member of Parliament later on in life, and then also administrator of the Northern Territory for a couple of years.
So you didn't really know Jock very well?
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. Yes, I knew him, yes.
You went to school with him?
Yes, I met him when he was in Canberra. I met him, went down and had afternoon tea with him one day. The Parliament House.
Now, the Chinese community up there.
Yeah, a lot of Chinese.
At school now.
They were very smart, very smart, the boys. Well, there was a boy there named Teddy Moo. His people used to run a bakery in Cavendish Street. And he's got two sons, doctors, here in Brisbane. Now, they're two Moo boys, I think they were down in the valley. Well, they were. I don't know where they are now.
And so did anyone go away to boarding school?
Wait a minute now. Les Lampy went to a board. They had a scholarship every year. It actually came in the year after I left school. And I left school at the age of 12. I'd finished. I'd gone as far as I could go. Then the scholarship came in the year after I left school. Les Lampy won the first scholarship. Norm Lampy won the second scholarship. And Doug Lampy won the third scholarship. And then a boy named... what's his name? Hales, I think his name was. I think he's one of the Hales boys. And he won a scholarship. And they all went to... Except one all went to Southport School. And the boy Hales, I think it was, went to... Charters Tower School, and they were the only three that I knew of. But there were others after it. But there was only one scholarship a year where they could go on an advanced education at all. We only went to about the sixth, seventh grade up there, that was all.
Did you ever leave Darwin, travel away as a child?
No. I didn't leave Darwin until I was, 16 before I left Darwin.
And what was that for?
That was when I took my father down. He was ill. I took him down to his brother down in Toowoomba, where he died.
Mm. And you went by boat?
Boat to Brisbane. And he went up by train to Toowoomba, and I went on to Adelaide to my auntie. And I just got to Adelaide, and I got word they'd died, and I went across the boat straight back to Darwin. I went back at Darwin and within 3 weeks.
What can you remember of the boat trip?
Oh, I actually had about 4 boat trips from Darwin after that when I was in the Commonwealth, or in the NT administration and the Commonwealth government. Every 3 years you had a trip away south. And we used to travel, try and get on the Almirella. That was the best boat to travel on, but there was the Montoro, the Matarum, the Manunda, the Malabar, and they were the main, Almirella of course, they were the main boats, BP boats. But before them, there was the China Line used to run to Darwin, the Tai Yuan and Shangsha, a few of those boats. They ran from Singapore to Sydney and called in at Darwin. And then from Western Australia, there was the old Bambara. She used to run to Darwin. Then after her, the Kalinda. When the Bambara was scrapped, the Kalinda came on and ran from. But they only ran about every 2 months from Fremantle up. That was the only time we ever got any fresh vegetables or meat when the boats came in.
And how regularly was that then?
Well, monthly from the east coast and every 2 months from the west coast. But the Chinese grew a bit of vegetable in Darwin, but it's not really enough to supply the whole town. Mm. And Verberg used to grow a bit on the Adelaide River.
Yes. So for keeping of food, there was no electricity?
Nothing, no.
So what did your mother do?
Oh, we had ice chests. The ice was made by old Felix Holmes. He had an ice works. He ran practically everything in Darwin at that time. Mm.
Yeah. Actually, can you describe the Holmes estate in your time, where it was?
Oh, yes, it was. I can remember Felix Holmes very well. He was a fairly big, well, not very tall man, but very, very stout, a very big man. And he lived in a very fairly big house too. He had a beautiful home there in Mitchell Street. And he had the butcher shop, bakery, soft drink cordial place. Later on, he had the electricity, ran the electricity in Darwin, and he had a station out at Humpty Doo. We shot buffaloes and kept his cattle, and he had the slaughterhouse. We ran practically everything.
mm-hmm.
And when electricity started in Darwin, we paid 1 and 6 a unit for electricity, and in those days 1 and 6 was a lot of money.
And can you remember the connecting of it?
Yes.
Were you there for that?
Yeah. Morris Hulse was in charge of the engines, and they ran the lines all around, and it was all DC. There was no AC current. It was all direct current, and the lights were flickering all the time with the direct current.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. All right. Now, you left school at 12.
Mm-hmm.
What did you do then?
I started as a messenger boy in the post office. I was there for 6 months.
What year would that have been?
1926. Just early 1926, I started in the post office. And then I went from the post office. Leslie Giles asked me if I'd come over as a junior clerk into the NT administration. So I went over there, and I stayed there until late 1930, working in the sub-treasury mainly. And then from there I went, Bill West, he was the work supervisor, he asked me if I'd go down to the works department, the Commonwealth, and work with him. So I transferred down to there then. I worked in the works department, where I stayed until 1938, when I went out. I couldn't go anywhere, couldn't get on any further in the office. There was as high as I could go, and I thought, oh, it's time we got out and learned a bit. So I went out with the surveys, on surveying the North-South Road from Darwin to Mataranka. and worked with two engineers. There's Kevin Graham and Jerry Whitlock. He's an American chap, Jerry Whitlock. And then from there I went on to the construction of the Mountain Dam. Worked with an engineer named Norm White. And then from there I went on out into the Army in 1939.
Right, now this North-South Road survey, how long were you away for that?
Well, we'd be out for about a fortnight at a time. We'd go out for about a fortnight and doing surveying, and after we'd do a bit of surveying, we'd have gangs coming behind us, cutting down the trees and along the lines so that start to form the roads up. It was all a dirt road, of course, done with ordinary graders. And
so you were actually straightening or resurveying?
Well, we had to try and get a road through. We were trying to put an all-weather road through. And from Darwin to Catherine, it was very, very difficult because of the number of creeks and that, and we're trying to work in the hills in the back of Adelaide River and around that area, right through the back way. But the actual road does cover part of it now, what we originally did, but it's not the full length of the road that we did. This has been altered a lot.
Can you tell us more now about your Mountain Dam experience?
Yes, well, that Mountain Dam, Dr. Woolnough, the government geologist, Commonwealth government geologist, he came up to Darwin. He was commissioned to put a water supply through. Well, he was asked if a water supply could be put through to Darwin, because we were living on wells up there at that time. And
so when would that have been?
In the early 1930s, about 1933-34, and he was flying up, and he flew over the mountain catchment area, and he saw this break in the hills there, and he thought, well, that'd be a good place. He wanted to go and have a look at it, so he asked me to take him out, and I went out with him and had a look, and he said yes, it looked quite good, and it was chosen as the area. And then we started work on the dam out there then. And of course, in that area, there was no sand or gravel or anything, only just like a granite rock. And I had to dig all this rock out and put it through. They put crushers in and everything. We had to crush our own sand and do all that on the spot. There's no concrete mixed by companies and brought to you. You had to mix it all there in mixers and pour it. And once you started pouring concrete on the dam, you had to go, you might do 36 hours without a break, straight through.
Mm. Yeah. Was it a special way of constructing the dam?
Yes, we constructed it as actually a miniature boulder dam, same as the one in America. There's no reinforcing steel in the actual dam wall. There's a bit of reinforcing steel in the back part where they got the pumps and that to get the water out. But in the dam itself, it's all done with what they call cyclopean concrete. You lay the 6-inch layer of concrete right across the whole length of the wall, and then you put big rocks, stagger them all the way across, and you put concrete all around the rocks and vibrate it with vibrators under the rocks and that, and then put another 6-inch layer over and put another, stagger them all the way up. And that's how that wall is built, and it's still standing today.
How long did the dam take?
Well, it was only just being constructed. It was only up to ground level when I left there, because we started about 25 feet down. Don't have to get onto solid rock. And it was only just coming up to ground level when I left there in 1939. So I don't know exactly. It was just after the war started that they rushed it to get it through when the war broke out.
Mm. You were talking about having wells prior to that at home. Where was your water supply then for your home?
In our backyard. Well, it was in the backyard.
How far down?
I think it was about 35, 40 feet. And the water in Darwin was in limestone. And I don't know if anybody from Darwin got false teeth. I've got all my own teeth. My grandfather had all his own teeth. My mother had all her own teeth. People have got their own teeth. That's from drinking the lime water. Mm-hmm. But we didn't drink it directly from the well. We used to use what they call dripstones. They came from up in Singapore area. They were made out of sand, like a sandstone, and they stood on a frame, and you had a jug underneath, and you filled up in the centre of it, and the water ran through the, filtered through the sand and dripped off the bottom of it into a jug, and that was going all the time. We'd keep that full and we'd have beautiful fresh water all the time.
So how did you go for bathing yourself then?
Oh, we had water, reticulated water from the well. We had a tank above it. We had a pump that pumped the water up from the well into the tank and reticulated. We had three houses on our well. There was Mrs. Bell and ours and my grandfather's next door. Mm. We were on that well. Mm.
Now, socially in Darwin, when you were working, What did you do for social activities?
Oh, I played cricket, football, golf, tennis, swimming, shooting, catching crocodiles, chasing buffaloes, did everything.
Now, fishing. Where did you go fishing?
Well, when I was a boy, I used to go away for 2 or 3 days with the abbos. They were always looking for me.
Where did you go?
Oh, I'd go in a canoe somewhere across the harbour or in mangroves.
Oh, what did you catch?
Oh, barramundi and crabs, and cook them on the land and cook them on the shore and stay on Shell Island for a night or two. And
so you didn't go down to the rivers? Or...
No, mainly in the harbour. You used to fish mainly off the wharves, off the old wharf. You had plenty of fish from there in those days.
Mm. And the Aboriginals that you went with, I mean, where did they live?
Well, I mainly went with a chap named, what's his name? I forget his name. He was a half-caste boy. Actually, he was a returned soldier from the First World War. He committed suicide in Darwin. His father was at Government House. His father and mother worked at Government House as servants there. Robert... I can't think of his name now. I'd go away for a couple of days with him. We'd spear over the day. We'd come home, we'd spear some stingrays and bring them back for everybody, all the Aboriginals around. Mm.
So how did you catch the barramundi?
Oh, spears. All spearing. Mm. Yeah, no lines, all spears.
You'd have to be accurate, wouldn't you?
Oh, yes.
Now, buffalo shooting then. Yeah. Where did you go for that?
Humpty Doo mainly. We used to shoot... I used to go out. George Goodman was the manager of Humpty Doo and a very good friend of ours, and we used to go out practically every weekend to his place and go out buffalo shooting. Often when I went on leave from work, we used to get 4 months every 3 years, and that's the only leave we got. And instead of coming south, I'd go out buffalo shooting, go out and stay with George, and he'd have a... See, buffalo hides in those days were very, 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 very high priced and very precious, because it was used as... All the machinery was run by belts, and the buffalo hide was used as the belts. It was absolutely outstanding. And it was shipped overseas and made into leather. And we used to have all those stations there, Coolpinya, Humpty Doo, Marakai, and all those stations all had to get a certain number each year to pay for their running. And I used to go out and shoot there with George Goodman. We shoot from horseback and also on foot.
And then the purpose was just for the skins?
Skin
them then?
Yes, skin them and bring the skin back, and the lubras would clean them off, wash them, salt them down with dry salt and fold them and put them there and just keep them.
And where did they go from there?
Shipped away to Sydney and... From Sydney, they were shipped overseas. Oh.
Did you ever eat the buffalo meat?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes, they're very good. Beautiful.
People in Darwin, did they eat buffalo meat?
No, not very much. No, we had bullocks. Right. Only on the stations. Even then, I mean, we'd only take the rump or the fillet steak out of them. That's all we'd take. Mm. Aboriginals would take the ribs and we wouldn't worry about them.
As a Commonwealth employee, did you get any... You got the leave every 3 years. Did you get... Would it have been paid leave south?
Yes. Fares paid both ways, first class.
Did you find most people went south? Was it unusual to stay?
Oh, no. A lot of people did stay in Darwin, but, I mean, mainly there were people from south that came up to Darwin to work, and you know, went south for their leave or went home again, transferred back. It's like in the post office, they only came up for a period of 3 years and then they went back again. And the Eastern Extension Telegraph Company was the same. They used to come up and stay a certain time and went back down south.
Where did you find most of the people came from? Was it South Australia?
Mainly, yes.
Now, with sport?
Well, football was a big game up there, but that was played in the wet season in Darwin, on the opposite to what it is down south, in the dry wet season, because the ground was soft from the rain. In the dry season, it was as hard as a rock and you've got too much gravel rash.
What sort of football was it?
Australian rules. Mm. Only played Australian rules up there. And a terrible lot of the people from south, they played down south and had some very good players up there. But they had three teams. When the Vessies were going, the Vessies had a team. And then there's a team, Wanderers, that was the post office. But they had some, they used to take some of the coloured boys in with them, and Chinese boys and that, to help them out to form the team. And then there was the BAT, or the Eastern Extension Telegraph Company, but they were called the Silver Tails. Well, the Waratahs, so they were the Silver Tails. They were all government officials. After Vessies closed down, the team was named Buffaloes. It was the Buffaloes and the Wanderers and the Waratahs. And the Buffalo team was mainly the coloured boys. And I think it's still going down.
Oh, yes, those names are very familiar to me.
Yeah, well, Buffaloes were the team that mainly the half-caste boys and the Chinese boys.
Mm. Who did you play for then?
Well, I played for Buffaloes for a while. Originally, when they were first formed, and I played for Wanderers too, but Waratahs. When I got in the government offices, I had to play with the Waratahs. That was important and absolutely essential.
And what sort of rivalry? I mean, who were the best?
Well, different ones won every different years, and that there was a full year, 6 months of football, and then there was tennis, and right up to A grade. What do we call A grade up there? Pennant tennis and A grade tennis, and the women had played tennis, and they had social clubs and different things. And
now, with football, where did you play?
On the old Darwin Oval. It's the one on the Esplanade, around near the Darwin Hotel rather. Uh-huh. Near the Darwin Hotel.
And what about tennis? Where was that?
That was over there too. Tennis courts were on the old. And there's also tennis courts at the Presbyterian Church. Down at, where's the corner of Wood and corner of Wood Street and Mitchell Street, I think it was.
What were the courts made of?
Concrete.
Oh,
concrete courts.
Yeah. Any other sport?
Cricket. Oh.
And that was played on the oval as well,
yes,
was it?
Yes, that was on the oval there. Mm. Oh. Yes, everything was held on the oval at that time.
Yeah. And did the heat affect you?
No, not any way at all. No, we didn't worry about the heat. The heat was good. I would often play on in terrific thunderstorms and lightning, and people were getting knocked over with lightning and that. They're still played on.
Now, with your brothers and sisters, can you just run through them, please?
Yeah, an elder brother. He was the eldest in the family.
His name?
Donald. Mm-hmm. And he died about 3 months ago in Sydney.
Did he stay in Darwin?
Yes, he was there right through practically right through the war in Darwin.
Mm. What did he do?
He was a painter in the works department, and then he was driving. During the war, he was driving for somebody up there. I don't know who, I can't remember who it was. I think it was somebody connected with Ansett. He was one of their drivers, and he was there when Darwin was raided, bombed and everything. And I know that Ansett wanted him to drive for them, or this man wanted him to drive Ansett buses when he came down, take them up to the Northern Territory, but he didn't do it. Then he came into the office in Sydney in the works department down there for some time too, after the war.
Right. And then you were second in the family. And then who was next?
My sister Vera. She's married to engineer Jack Heron, that did the water supply in Darwin. And she lives on the Gold Coast now, down Broad Beach. And my other sister Muriel, she's married to my wife's brother, who lives in the Tuggerwong and Sydney and Tuggera Lakes. And my youngest sister, she was in Darwin, but she died about 2 years ago in Darwin.
And who did she marry?
Tommy Thompson. He was in the post office. He was there when it was bombed, actually. Mm. I don't know how he got out of it. He did.
And socially with your brothers and sisters, I mean, did you go to dances together?
Oh, yes, with dances. Yeah, one of the biggest events of the year in Darwin was the Bachelor's Ball. Oh, yes, every year we had that. That started at 8 o'clock at night and went all right through till daylight next morning and went straight to work from the ball.
And what did you wear to that?
Oh, white suits and black tie and ties. And, oh, yes, you get dressed up for that.
And what did the women wear?
Oh, they were all dressed up in evening dress, yeah.
Gloves?
Oh, yes. Yes, it was very, very posh.
Mm. Where was that held?
Soldiers' Hall. Oh, yeah, the old Soldiers' Hall. That was where practically everything was held. Oh. Mm. Didn't use that town hall very much for social work.
And what sort of band would be playing?
Mainly piano and or flute and guitar, I think it was, something. No, there wasn't a very big band, drums, but it was good enough for us.
And the pictures, you went to the pictures?
Pictures, yes, one picture show, no roof on it, tin walls, old Don Theatre, that's where the Don Hotel stands now. And that was run by a chap named George Webb. And he had his own little engine outside that ran the electricity for it. And it was all in the open air, and when it rained, you put your umbrellas up and sat under the umbrellas there.
Was it segregated, the seating?
Yes. The back part was back at the... It was, wooden, like wooden benches, ran up the back from the top of the wall down to the floor, and the Aboriginals sat on one side and some of the other whites on the other, but down the bottom part there were canvas chairs, and they were about $2 each, so the canvas chairs, and sixpence up on the bleachers.
And what did you do at interval?
I went to the Chinese shops around the place and drinks and lollies and things.
Now, picnics, where did you go for that?
Mainly, we used to go to Rapid Creek, mouth of Rapid Creek. That used to be our main swimming hole. There used to be a big hole in there, in amongst the rocks, and we used to swim in there. We used to go there quite often for picnics.
How did you get there?
Oh, by car. We had an old 1914 Dodge. We used to get everywhere in it. I think it's still going in Alice Springs now.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. It was the last time I was up there, I saw it there. But yes, we went there into Howard Springs and out to Coolpinia Station, you know, different places, and Howard and the Howard River, Humpty Doo, any of those places we go for picnics.
Was there a problem with stingers in the sea for swimming?
Oh yes, in the wet season. But they didn't worry us. We used to go swimming just the same. We'd get stung and race out and put hot sand on it, and it was all right. Get welts on our arms and that. And I remember my uncle getting stung. He dived in once and got stung all over his arms and got around the wrists, and he nearly died. He had more vomiting like black ink from it. And there was one boy that died there. He dived in and got around the chest. He killed him. But we used to use cast nets for catching prawns and that thing around there, and you get stingers in them, nets all the time. We never worried about them. Just pull them out and threw them away.
And where did you go swimming?
Well, we started swimming down at Fort Hill, old Fort Hill, where the jetties are now. That were the original baths. It was just made out of wire netting on sticks around, and they shifted from there to... Lamaroo Beach. They built the baths at Lamaroo Beach with a concrete wall which would retain water at low tide, and like wooden slats all the way around, close enough to keep the stingers out, they said, but they used to get in. But it was actually, it was more or less a shark-proof place than anything else, sharks and crocs.
What can you remember of the Aboriginal compound at Caelan?
Well, actually, I remember when the Aboriginals were camped at Lamaru Beach. I can remember as well as anything. Well, I don't know whether they were all there then. I mean, because I think a lot of them were at the compound. But there were a lot still camping at Lamaru Beach. And I remember a police tracker named Bigfoot Charlie. Our boy we had working, I think he was a Wagai, he came from the Wagai tribe. And he came in one day and he said, boss, he said, Charlie been told they're going to take his kidney fat. I said, the Aboriginals used to kill each other for their kidney fat. That was for putting on their body and decorating themselves up with. And quite a lot of them killed for that. And we said, oh, he won't be killed, he's police boy. And the next day he came in and said, Charlie dead. We said, why? He said, they're going to kill him, take his kidney fat. And that was a tracker. And they were at Lamaru Beach, and then they shifted them. They made them get out of there and go to the compound after that. But when I remember the compound, old Bob McDonald, he was in charge of it there. He used to walk around with a stock whip around his neck. And if they didn't do that, they got a crack with a whip.
Did you have people working for you in the house?
Yes, they didn't live with us. Like on the property, they used to come in of a morning and go home in the afternoon to the compound. Compound was out at Miley Point, Caelan compound.
And what did they do in the home then?
Oh, they did housework and yard work and a bit of washing or something like that. I mean, different ones, like if you had a boy or if you had a lubra. The lubras did washing and that sort of thing and a bit of washing up in the kitchen, but the black boys generally did the yard work and...
Did you look down on them?
No. We never looked down on them. We used to not, more or less go with them. I mean, I as far as I'm concerned, the Aboriginals are as good as anybody. I mean, if you did want anything done, if you showed them what to do and did it with them, they'd do it as good as God. But if you left them on their own, they'd actually sit down and wouldn't do it. But I always found I've never had an argument or a row with any Aboriginal in my life.
Did they stay for long, or?
Yes, I'd say they'd work for a year, and then you'd let them go home, and you'd give them a bag of flour and sugar, tea and tobacco. That's all they want. Away they'd go, or they might want a bit of calico. Red calico, that was their main thing. Red calico for the lubras. They used to wear the red calico around the waist. But I can remember sitting on Bell's Corner one day, and three or four Aboriginals came along the road with the lubras, and a little pickaninny sitting on the shoulder, and I guarantee that they could hardly crawl, just sitting on the shoulders, with two hands full of the mother's hair, the Aboriginals and the lubras, not a stitch of clothing on, and the old buck carrying the spears, and she was carrying the swag and everything on her back, as well as the kiddie. I remember that as well as anything, walking down Banner Street.
And they had corroborees, didn't they?
Yes, well, had corroborees about every two or three weeks down on Mental Beach. That was a ceremonial. It was a Sunday afternoon and all the white people used to walk out from the town and get down there and watch them. And, but if there was a death or anything like that, they'd put on a special corroboree. And if there's a row amongst the tribes, they'd put on a real fight down there. Spear one another. You can go and watch that too, but you're not supposed to. You have to be careful.
They got quite violent.
Oh yes, if one got hit, of course the other they'd have to go until one of the others got hit. Mm. Oh yes, it was. Mm. I've never seen them kill, but I mean they were very wonderful the way they could miss the spears. I mean they could knock the ball with a stick. Mm. The spears coming towards them, they were very good.
So is that area in fact a sacred burial ground?
It was, yes. Well, it was. There was a lot of Aboriginals buried there. Mm. That's where the casino is now.
Mm. You were there when the guns were put in place.
Mm-hmm. I was there when the guns landed in Darwin. I was in the works department. They actually took them out to where they had to go, East Point and Point Emery, out at Larrakia. They had 2 6-inch guns at Larrakia and 2 6-inch guns at East Point.
Mm-hmm. And they landed off the boats?
Boats, yes.
And how were they actually carted there? I mean, they were very heavy.
Oh, they brought their own transports with them from south, big trucks. Mm. Like they were big Leyland trucks with the carriers on the back, or sort of a semi-trailer thing that they were carried on.
Mm. Was East Point used as for recreation?
It used to be, yeah, originally. There's a little sandy beach there. And in the wet season, big surf used to run in there from the monsoons. We used to swim out there off the rocks in the surf there. Yeah.
Coming back then to Vestey's at the meatworks there,
mm-hmm.
You were there when that was going,
yeah.
Weren't you? Were you associated with Vestey's at all?
No, not very much. No, I knew the people. I think Conaher was the general manager there, and I think Gowdy was his assistant. I remember them, but the main thing I remember about Vestey's was when they were a living quarters for the men. It got burnt down. It was a big, about a 5-storey building. It was the biggest building in Darwin. Actually, there's a photo in the booking of it. And it was burnt down when they opened in 1925, I think it was, the second time.
Mm-hmm.
And that was burnt down there one evening. Luckily, nobody was hurt, but I think the men actually set it on fire. Well, I mean, we all rushed out from town to have a look at it. But the actual working of Vestey's, I never went in there, into the place at all when it was working.
Mm. Chinatown. Did you ever go there?
Oh,
often?
Yes. Yes, there's a man, a chap, a bootmaker down there. He's Ernie Lee. He wasn't a full Chinese. He's part Chinese. And he was married to a white woman. And he had a son named Bobby. We used to knock around together, and Bobby died about 4 years ago in Pine Creek. He was growing fruit up in Pine Creek. He had a store in Pine Creek, and yes, we used to go down there and play, and old Ernie Lee used to go fishing a lot with my father, and I used to go with Bobby, and my brother and I used to play around there. Bobby had a dog, and we used to go out with a dog hunting in the bush there, because of Darwin, and Darwin was all bush then. 1 mile out, near out in the bush.
Yeah. The Chinese shops, what can you remember of them?
Well, Fang Chong Lung was the big place where they used to make, he used to make all the clothes. He was the main person that did all the clothing for Darwin, practically. Oh, Wing Chong Sing did a lot too, but not nearly as much as Fang Chong Lung. Another thing in Darwin, they never used it. We never carried money. It was all credit. Everybody lived on credit up there. Every shop you went into, you didn't pay any money for anything. You just put it on the slate, and every month you got a bill. And if you paid it within a month, you got 2.5% discount.
And people were generally good with that credit. I mean, they didn't.
Yeah, a lot of them during Vestey's time, I believe, got away with a lot of. Owing a lot of money, clearing out and that.
Yeah.
Actually, there's a big story in one of the books here about Bob Toopin clearing out when he was there, when he was mayor of Darwin.
So did you feel that you were one of the well-off people in Darwin as far as finances
well,
go?
Well, yes, we never wanted for anything. Never wanted for anything at all. I mean, we always had what we wanted.
Mm.
I mean, we weren't wealthy by any chance. I mean, there was not much wealth around at that time. But, I mean, we never wanted for anything at all. I mean, we had everything we wanted. And, of course, my father died when I was only 16. From then on, we had a bit of a struggle for a while. But
Yes, now what happened then? Did your mother have to work?
Or? No, she didn't work. No, I was working and my brother was working, but that was just the time of the Depression. And there were no welfare, there's no welfare or anything. Well, I think my brother got a pound a week for a day's work or something. That was all we got. And then, but luckily I was working all the time, and I think one of my sisters were working.
Mm. Can you remember people coming from the south during the Depression?
Yes, they used to come up there, but they didn't stay there because there was nothing there. People coming out from out back, out on the stations and that sort of thing, but they were better off out in the bush than they were in town there.
I suppose you were one of the lucky ones having a government job.
Yes, I never lost a day's work. Mm. Right through the whole Depression, I was very lucky. Mm. Yeah.
Did you feel that the Chinese were wealthy?
Well, to a certain extent, yes. But they never showed it. I mean, they were quite generous people, the Chinese. I mean, Chinese New Year was a terrific time in Dahan. Goodness me, there was parties and everything, all the white people joined in with them, and they'd have their dances through the street with the dragons, and we'd all be in under the dragons and playing around with them and crackers, and then go and have a big dinner with them at night. It was a time. And they were really wonderful people. I never had a moment's trouble with any of them.
Now, the hotels in Darwin,
yeah.
Can we just go through each of those?
Right, there's a Terminus Hotel in Cavendish Street that was built alongside the Tree of Knowledge. Our Tree of Knowledge was outside the hotel. And then there was the Victoria Hotel in Smith Street, opposite the Star Theatre. And then there was the Club Hotel around in Mitchell Street. Now, originally, they were all the hotels there were owned by the government. And when Gilroy's time, they forced him to sell them privately. And the first person that I remember having the club, I know, was in the Club Hotel, was Mrs. Bell. That's Heather Harris's mother. She and her husband were there for a while. And then the Parers came, and they bought the Terminus Hotel in Cavendish Street and the Club Hotel. And they ran that for many, many years. Around the two of the hotels, the families. And that's when Claude Cashman came to Darwin. And he was staying at the Club Hotel and he met his wife there. She was Beryl Perra. And they were married.
Because then did he get the news agency then?
No, he was in Jollies. He was what they call a counter jumper there. He was doing in the drapery part of it, selling stuff there in Jollies' store. He came up for Jolly Store. Yeah. And then after that, Adams and Foster had the paper shops then, and then Cashy started in it. He bought them out and started up.
Mm. So the hotels then we've done have been the Terminus?
Yeah.
And the Don?
Don. No, not the Don.
The
Victoria and the Club.
And the Club.
Now, the Don Hotel, Christina Gordon brought... May Brown came down to the Victoria Hotel. She was at Pine Creek. She was Mrs. Seal at that time. And he died, I think. And she remarried to this chap named Brown. And they came down... They had the Pine Creek Hotel. And they came down from Pine Creek to Darwin, took over the Victoria Hotel. And then Christina Gordon, she took over the Pine Creek Hotel, and then she brought Mrs. Almay Brown out. And then Mrs. Gordon had two sons, and one went away to South and he got married. And when he came back, Mrs. Gordon decided then that they'd go into the Don Hotel. The Don Hotel was built by... I think it was Snell, or one of the contractors up there, and Mrs. Gordon bought it out, and it became Gordon's Don Hotel.
And the Club Hotel then?
The club went right up almost to the war years, and then Mickey Paspaley bought that. And he bought it out and rebuilt the whole place into the Darwin Hotel. It's the Darwin Hotel now.
So were you there during the changeover?
I was there when Mickey started all this, yes.
Did he actually pull the other one down? Or?
Yes, well, not for a start. Mm. He built on the back of it, I think, for a start, and then pulled the front of it down afterwards. The old place was only a ramshackle sort of a place. It wasn't a very good place at all, or modern or anything like that. It was very old.
The administrator's house. Did you ever go there?
Government house?
Yes.
Yeah, I used to go there quite often. And I used to have afternoon teas and that there, the ladies and that. I'd go with those. But I remember when the Horsburgh was up there in the North Australian Commission, and they were investigating the North just after Gilruth. And he had two sons, and I used to go around and play with them, play tennis, and go around to their place quite often. Yeah.
And what were your recollections of going to the government house?
Well, we mainly played tennis and then just sat on the side and had a glass of lemonade or something like that and a bit of cake or something. But other than that, I never had anything to do inside with the people there. I remember when Waddell was there, an administrator, went around a couple of times and... I used to go to his office. He had an office built just down either side of it, and I used to work in there quite a bit.
Yeah. Did the general people in Darwin, did they feel that they could go to the administrator's house, or was it sort of, did they feel as if he was by invitation. He was quite superior in the, as far as that goes.
Yes. Mm. Actually, there's quite a class distinction in Darwin. I mean, there was as I said, the Silver Tails, the BAT and the government office.
What did BAT stand for?
British Australian Telegraph. Uh-huh. And it was also called the Eastern Australian Telegraph Company. BAT, they used to call it BAT for short.
So there was them?
And the government, all the government officials. They were all Silver Tails.
Yeah. And who were the next lot down then?
The post office. And they were next door to one another.
Well, where did the bank people fit in?
Well, the banks were the Silver Tails too.
Were they?
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. So what came then down below the post office?
People? Well, then there was generally the people that were, wharf people and labourers and things like that.
Mm. Where did the shopkeepers fit in?
Well... depends. See, you had the Chinese, shopkeepers, and you had the white shopkeepers. Mm. Well, the only white shopkeeper that I can remember that had a store there for many, many years was A.E. Jolly and Company. They were at the corner of Bennett and Smith Street, opposite the Commercial Bank. And, Mrs. Bleaser started a sports store there. But earlier on in history, the Solomon had a store there. That was in Smith Street. And then Luxton's had a store there. That was down in Smith Street also. And P.R. Allen had a store there. That was around in Mitchell Street. And out towards the 2.5 mile, or 1 mile we used to call it, was it's old Presley. He had a store. And they were the only white people that had stores up there. But Jolly's were the... was the main one, but the Chinese were the people that had the stores there, and they were the ones that most of the people dealt with.
Mm-hmm. As far as food and clothing?
Oh, yes.
Everything like that.
Everything.
Yeah.
But in those days, I mean, you dealt with a store there, and at Christmas time you got a ham and, real Christmas hamper from every store that you dealt with.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, okay, Christmas Day. It was very hot. So what generally happened?
Well, in my time, they used to put a 9-gallon keg on the end of your table, set your table with all the Christmas goodies, and you'd go out. You'd all got different people go to the different houses all over the place. You might meet up with the people from the house you go to. You go and have a drink and have something there, and then go on to the next house and... just wander around and house to house, and then you'd have a big Christmas dinner at night at home with your own people.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And did church come into it at all?
Who?
Did you go to church? Was Darwin very religious?
The midnight. They used to have a midnight service at the Catholic Church and the Church of England.
Mm.
But we used to go to church on Christmas Day, Easter.
Mm.
But the religion up there, I mean, the Catholics and everybody got on There was no distinction or anything, any animosity amongst each other up there at all. Mm-hmm. Our Father Henske, he was the Catholic priest up there. He used to come around home and stay and have afternoon tea with us and that. And we were Church of England. He'd come around and Kentish, I think it was a Presbyterian man. He'd come around. I mean, everybody mixed together. Father Zell he was over at Bathurst Island. I remember him as well, and a great big black beard down here. Yeah. Brother Smith, all those. Brother Smith, I remember him when he was in the Navy. He was in Darwin in the Navy in the old uranium on the when they were doing all the surveying of the Australian coast. And he was a wild man, drunk, swearing. And he turned out, next thing we knew, he came up as Brother Smith in the Catholic Church. And he went over to Bathurst Island. He was a changed man, and they started a sawmill over there cutting timber, and he cut his left hand off. And I went down on the boat with him to... He was in hospital for a while in Darwin, and then we came down on the boat to Sydney. Yeah.
And so the religions then would have been...
It's only the three.
Just the Catholic... Church of England and Presbyterian.